Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast from Westwood One. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
Yo, yo.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Psyched to be here.
And our iTunes Army grows.
One, yes!
By one more review. I want to thank ChemicalKid336. For the following review, I've been listening to these guys for quite some time, from Limit Break Radio to Checkpoint Radio. I listen to at least one of their shows a day at my crappy gas station job to cope with the idiocy of gas station customers. Not only does this help me escape my hell, but they get me pumped every day to watch or play competitive video games. They even got me so pumped, I was able to talk to the manager of my local Buffalo Wild Wings to put on some Overwatch League on the patio outside.
Yes!
Yes! Can we... Round of applause for that gentleman.
All right, bro.
Well done.
Hell yeah.
You the real MVP, because you are helping spread the message of esports. He goes on to say, thanks, guys, for making a legitimate radio show about esports and gaming news. I hope one day there will be a riot in my city when the Los Angeles Gladiators win the Overwatch League like Philadelphia when the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
There will be a cold day in many circles of hell before that happens.
Ouch.
But with
Norris
all that
savage.
But with all that said, bro, I'm happy that you left the review.
Yes.
And I'm glad we getting you through your cold, long days at the gas station. Let me get 10 on pump one.
Yes.
Norris, I thought you were one step away from saying you're doing God's work.
It is God's work.
It is getting Overwatch on the patio.
That's God's work.
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
ChemicalKid336, thank you so much for your iTunes review. If you want to leave us an iTunes review, because we have challenged you to 60 reviews this year.
We did.
We had 30 last year in our first year of podcasting. We want to get up to 60 iTunes reviews. We know how many people download the show each week. There are thousands of you out there, so we want to make sure that we can spread the message of Checkpoint Radio as far and wide as possible, and iTunes reviews actually really help that.
And
so,
if I remember correctly, if we get to the 60, Joe said he would dress up as Bubsy.
That's
he
right.
Yeah.
That I think I did agree to, yes.
Yes. So if you need added incentive to get us to 60 reviews on iTunes, there you go. All right, so we got to check out what was going on this week in the radio show. We start off talking about PUBG.
And, as we like to do.
Well, we haven't had a reason to talk about PUBG in quite a while.
Yeah.
This past weekend being out at IEM Katowice, and dude, I was so impressed with the presentation out at IEM Katowice. From just the way that they had organized the teams on stage to the way that they had organized the broadcasts, this was a well done broadcast all around. ESL really knows what they're doing.
Completely random side note, I got asked the other day, you know, what's different doing a radio show or doing this radio show in your life? And I said, I know how to pronounce Katowice.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the biggest marked difference in my life between a year ago and now, is, you know, I can pronounce Katowice.
One of the things that I wanted to mention on the show that I didn't get to, that I wish that other esports like Overwatch would utilize, is what the PUBG cast did really well is showing us split screen images. Multiple images, whether it was, you know, two different perspectives or whether it was someone's perspective, and the top down map so that we could see where everyone was located. I used to think that much information on the screen might be too much, and for Overwatch it still might be, but for PUBG it was so necessary and it helps so much.
That map based line of fire line that they put out is the best. Like the best invention I could imagine.
When I first saw it, I'm kind of like, what is that? And like, it dawned on me, I'm like, that is absolute genius.
It really
we
is.
We actually said that Yeah. When we talked about IM Oakland.
Yeah.
When we talked about what would be great for them to add in order for the experience to be better. And we said, I would really like to see where the bullets are going.
Top down, Matt. Yep. You can even see they do top down smoke, too, when they throw smoke grenades. Yep. Oh, it's so good.
You know, one of my, this may be a strange thing to really enjoy about it, but I like the yellow outlines that they had put around literally every player that's on the map.
No, necessary.
The reason that I liked them is because every once in a while, you'd get this perspective where someone would be looting in a two-story building and someone beneath them would be driving in a car, and it looks like they were Professor X-ing around the bottom of the of the building.
Yes.
And I just for whatever reason, it made me giggle hysterically and I couldn't stop.
I remember the moment that you were talking about too, where someone comes into the house and they're like hiding in this little cubicle thing, and they walk around and just dome them in the head with the shotgun.
Yep.
It was so good.
But it really goes to one of my favorite elements of PUBG, is not knowing like what is around you, and so
the
often
uncertainty.
Right. Yeah. And but they'll be there with those outlines and be like, there are 12 people in the immediate vicinity of you and no one sees each other.
Right.
What an amazing game this is.
Right. Well, when you have 16 teams, I mean, you know, first of all, again, when we talk about esports, mostly that's a two-team. If it's a team game that we're talking about, it's a two-team game.
Yep. Yeah.
You've got 16 of these teams that are vying for, you know, ostensibly points at the end that are tallied to be able to figure out who wins. And I think that that's such an interesting way to organize a tournament, because it keeps you engaged in every single, not just map, but every single firefight.
I love the way that the eighth round ended up. I mean, obviously, Vengar went on to win it, but because they had been knocked out so early, and I think FaZe ended up winning the final map, but they were too far behind to do anything, and the announcers are basically like, FaZe at this point is just ruining everyone's day.
Yeah, because FaZe,
he was being a spoiler. Yeah.
There's no way they're going to win, but if Optic had been able to go all the way and win that last game with a bunch of kills, that would have been enough to put them over the top. Mm-hmm. But you're right, FaZe got to play spoiler and just literally ruin everyone's day. And, you know, FaZe Clan and Optic Gaming have had a bit of beef in other esports over the years, so
it was,
I'll bet you that
it
felt kind of good.
Yeah, it was destiny. But speaking of Optic in that last game, and we didn't spend a lot of time on it, but my God, dude, that last
Optic went on the
15
warpath.
Minutes from Optic, they literally wiped out, like, what was it, like four teams
they were,
by themselves.
At that point, they were playing for points, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The moment they saw Vengar eliminated, they're like, yes, we have a chance. Let's go for
it. We gotta go for it. Balls to the wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was really interesting to me, because in so many games, once your team is eliminated, you know, almost every other esport functions on a bracket style. There might be, you know, round robin or whatnot before, but it all goes into seeding the bracket.
Yes.
And then once your team's eliminated, you have to make that decision. Is there another team I care enough about to keep watching, or is it time to move on? In PUBG, there's 8 games,
yep,
and everyone plays,
yep,
all 8 games. So even if your team is so far out of it, if they're your team, you still want to watch them play.
Absolutely.
Sure, they can't win. Maybe I'm a FaZe Clan fan and I enjoyed watching them screw over Optic.
Exactly. That's what I was going to bring up, is you get to see them play the spoiler. But even on top of all the UI overlays and the stuff they did to improve the viewer experience, I think one of the best things that changed in terms of tournament play is the fact that the circle moves in so much quicker.
Yeah, the way they changed the circle mechanics.
And so it makes the match more intense, because the entire pace of the match is much, much faster.
I remember thinking at Gamescom, you had those first few circle changes, and everyone playing so far outside the circle, you know, people looting down on the island to the south when the circle is up near the school and areas like that. And it's like, wow, it's kind of a bummer that they're able to spend so much time there. But the new way that they've got it, they've got that really quick first pull in.
Yes.
And then the circle shrinks a little bit less than it does in regular matches.
Which is having a really interesting effect on the way that the pros are having to play.
Yeah.
Because you do end up with these large squad firefights in a very condensed circle towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is interesting in and of itself. The end of game 4, we didn't get a chance to talk about it in as much detail as I'd like, because that was maybe one of the most intense 10 minutes in a video game that I've ever seen, in an esport that I've ever seen. It was truly impressive.
Right. The highlight that we played was only when there was about 9 players left, but that doesn't tell the whole story.
No.
Because there was at one point probably 20 or 30 people in that area trying to find a decent spot, and there was a crazy firefight, and then everything died down. And there was a moment of calm as we waited for that last circle.
Well, but the other part of that is that the way that the circle was moving, it was condensing around a factory area, which is, you know, there's not a lot of them. There's a lot of houses. There's a lot of cottages.
Yeah, there's only a couple factory
areas. There's only a few of these areas. And what was interesting is that the last few circles felt like a first-person shooter map.
It felt like a Call of Duty map.
It did. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is I was like, wow, this really feels
there's
like a Call of Duty
Call
map.
Of Duty map I'm actually thinking about.
That reminds me.
Isn't
reminds
it Rust?
Me of that. No, it's not Rust.
Oh, okay.
It's Modern Warfare 1.
But you're right, though. I can think of the map that you're talking about. And I think that is one of the most interesting factors about PUBG is that you can have a final circle. Not a final circle, but you can have one of the several final circles have 30% water, or it could be right. It could be in the middle of a field, or it could be right in the middle of the shit.
Well, and like we said a bit on the show, it really will change your strategy up. You see those maps where the circle has a big chunk of water, and you see the teams that say like, "Hey, we have a pretty good positioning. We have a lot of points.
Yeah.
If we play for positioning, we'll just go sit out in the water. We're not going to live. They're going to snipe us or kill us as soon as we have to leave the water.
Right.
But if we can get down to the top five teams that way, it's well worth the point investment, and then we'll go for it again in the next game. And I love this 8-game format where teams can make those kinds of decisions.
Yeah.
You don't have to play for the win in every map. Maybe sometimes you'd like to see your team play for the win every map, but you have to have a measured approach, and your team captain has to have the common sense to be able to say, listen, our opponents just went out. All we need to do is finish better than them.
Yeah.
Further better than them, the better.
What do you think that conversation between Avengar sounded like after they got eliminated on map 8? On match 8?
That was the question. Because at first, I don't think they were going to be playing for a stalled out strategy. I figured they had such a big lead, they'd probably play to show off a little bit.
Yeah.
But they had a bad drop, and two of their people got axed immediately.
Yeah.
And at that point, they said, okay, well, we can't go out first. Play it safe. And that's what it switched to. And then, of course, they went out first anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, to Norris's point, swear words is what it sounded like.
I would bet. Final question. PUBG, esports ready?
Yeah.
Oh,
now it is.
The question, I don't know how you could argue it's not anymore.
Now it is.
To me, it's the most fun competitive video game to watch.
I watched a little bit of Overwatch over the weekend, a good bit of NALCS, and a good bit of PUBG, and I enjoyed the PUBG watch far more than anything else.
Yeah.
If they could introduce a regionalized aspect to PUBG, I think it would, for me, give even Overwatch a run for its money.
We also talk about the latest in esports news, as well as OWL numbers being higher than NALCS for the first time. This is kind of a big deal. Listen, I know, Joe, that you qualified that statement quite a bit. Is to be expected from you
or anyone with journalistic integrity.
But I do think that is fairly notable considering how much of a pedestal NALCS or really all of League is compared to
other esports.
Exactly.
Any way you slice it. It is a big deal because even with all the qualifying statements that I put on it, the point is last week that wasn't the case.
Right.
And this week it is the case.
Yeah, well, I think the qualifiers are important because as we pointed out in our segment, it goes to show that Blizzard sort of looked at the NALCS, saw what worked, saw what didn't work, and asked how can we remedy that? And that's something that going forward is going to be important for any other games that want to establish leagues.
And I'll be very curious to see how League in turn responds to that because, you know, they always say competition breeds quality.
Yeah.
And so as these two leagues are, and I mean, I don't think anyone's really questioning, these are the two premier leagues that are competing with each other at this point. How will they push each other to be better? And I think that's going to be a very interesting question to watch over the next few seasons.
Definitely a valid question.
League of Legends added a new map.
Oh, yeah. We can go back to Twisted Tree Line.
I was about to say Twisted Tree Line. They tried.
They did. They thought, like, what if we made it 3-on-3? And everyone hates it. What if we do that instead? Great. Awesome.
We also this week talked to David Highhill of the NFL a little bit about the Madden 18 League. Interesting conversation. You can find that over at our website, checkpointradio.com, as well as an archive of interviews from past episodes. If you're looking to get involved with Madden 18, You can find out more information from David Highhill. Again, checkpointradio.com.
By the way, guys, if you're ever having trouble with any of your parents trying to question the legitimacy of what you do, tell them about the people we've interviewed. Because my dad doesn't know much about esports, but if I tell him I interviewed an NFL executive the other day, well, that gets his attention. He's like, oh, really? You must be important.
I just tell my dad about that championship belt that they got at Madden, and I say, yo, you see this dog-ass belt that they got? And he's like, yo, that shit is fresh. I would play Madden professionally if that's what the prize was, plus some money.
Norris, I want your dad to call into the show someday.
I should tell him to come down one day.
Yeah, that'd be
your
fun.
Your guys' family is so much more supportive. I go home and I'm like, yeah, we're in 48 affiliates now. We just picked up blah, 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 blah. My grandma's like, you making money yet?
But see, here's the thing. It's because with my folks, they understand that I am the monster they created. And so they bought me all these video games as a kid. They're hoping to see a return on that investment now.
So is my grandma.
My parents are the same way. They were both musicians and performers. So when I'd say, like, when I could try to do something in performance, they're like, well, what are we going to say? No.
Right, exactly.
You know, when I got to go to the 5th annual conference on video game music,
yeah,
the composer for Halo said actually much the same thing, that both, you know, his dad was a film director and his mom was an artist or a creative. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, the one thing that I never heard growing up was that you can't make money doing that.
Yeah.
And he was like, that was so critically important, because I don't think we realize how quickly and swiftly that one phrase can crush a kid's dream.
Oh, without a doubt.
That's awesome, by the way, because I love the Halo soundtrack. That is one of my, if I had to do a top five list, yeah, just the opening to it. If I do a top five list of all time best soundtracks, Halo would be on that list.
He was a really interesting dude to listen to, because he had the opportunity, through his work with video game music, he had come across both Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and worked with them both personally.
Wow.
In fact, he was as old as both of them. They were both the same age. Age, well, and it makes sense. Also that same age.
It makes sense that he'd get to work with them. His game saved their system.
Pretty much.
Not and surprised.
Then, and then he also got to work with Paul McCartney as well.
That's cool. That's super cool.
Right? And, you know, one of the points that he made that I, and this was a big takeaway for me, is that Paul McCartney, I don't know if you know this, does not know how to read music.
Right, he doesn't.
Really?
He's actually quite proud of that fact.
And he boasts it. He boasts about the fact that he can't read or write music, and he writes by ear. He composes by ear.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
You know, and really at the center of this guy's, you know, discussion and symposium was him making the point that, because it was centered around technology and creativity.
Sure.
And every time you have a piece of technology that can come in and do the job that a trained ear could do, or that, you know, a drummer could do, that's one thing that has been automated in music to a shocking degree, is that, you know, drummers are kind of a rare thing. That's something that computers can do,
right,
very, very easily.
Because there's a lot of beat recognition.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, every time you add the ability to automate something, you lose the ability to do something else. Every time my job felt like it got easier, I lost the ability to do something that I could before. Like, he used to edit on tape and move to digital editing. And he's like, but I am a better editor because I trained on tape and because I use tape. And it was a fascinating, fascinating conversation there. And I wish it was archived somewhere on the internet that I could tell people to look it up, because that was a really, really inspiring conversation. Anyway, I'm not sure how we got there. But
we're very good at doing this.
But Discord, the chat program, has announced that it is going to be launching, or has already launched, rather, very verified servers.
Gotta get that little blue check mark next
what's
to your server.
What's the over under? Here we go. What is the over under, right? In terms of, we'll go by months. What is the over under after this is rolled out for OWL and a bunch of other esports organizations that somebody has some sort of Discord server scandal? What is the
over under on months?
Like 3 months?
3 months.
What do you think it's going to be? What do you think the
leaning between 3 and 4 months.
What do you think the scandal is going to be? Like specifically?
Oh, it's got to be fuel related.
See, no. It's not who.
Not who.
What's the nature?
It's either go
because it could be one of a few things. It could be toxicity.
Yep.
It could just be, you know, overall shittiness of that chat room.
Sliding into DMs.
That's
what it's going to be.
And then there's two varieties.
Because that's a two-way thing there.
Not just that, but there's proper age and underage.
And underage.
Yeah.
Okay. I see massive problems. I don't want to blast Discord, and I didn't want to go on the show and blast Discord. But I mean, like, yeah, dude, this is I think a primary concern out of all of this. And again, you're talking about kids that have no media education other than what they've been living with and experiencing day after day in media. And what we see reflected back at us is just terrible human behavior over and over and over again. Think of someone who thinks that the Jersey Shore is the normal way to act towards other human beings. And then
put them all together in a Discord server.
Suddenly the id of Twitter starts to make sense, right? Yep. Like when you realize the messages that we receive from media, especially the media that becomes popular, because there are absolutely a variety of messages that you can derive from a variety of media. Some of them serious, some of them not so serious. But the ones that seem to be the most popular are the dumbest ones.
Yeah. We took the biggest fans of 8 different reality shows and put them in a Discord server. These were the results.
But then people think it's fucking okay. Like, that's where we get, you know, that's where we get people who just think that it's okay to be an open asshole to people on the street. You know, oh, well, fucking my favorite podcast is a jerk, so that means that
those prank videos where
YouTube
somebody
videos.
People just like walk in. First of all, it's always be in the hood, it always be in the black community because they know black folk get riled up. But anyway, there was some dude walking into the hood trying to like kiss random dudes on the mouth or something. You go, it's a prank, dude, after you get socked in the mouth.
It's a social experiment, man.
One that I saw that I actually thought was really funny because the video itself was him continuously trying to pull down people's pants, but every single one of them he just gets punched in the face, and every video ends with him lying on the ground unconscious. And I'm like, all right, I see you're trying to make a point here.
I like that. I think that's pretty funny, Nate,
to your point is that I also see a lot of issues coming up with this, and I didn't even think about the whole the age thing. That was something I didn't even think about. Yeah. But a major thing that I do think is you're going to have unfettered, even more access. This is even more than just your regular Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. This is like focused, unfettered access for people who
are sustained. Because people hang out in Discord channels, long term.
Exactly. So this is a chat that could be going on for well over, you know, months and months and months and months.
Yeah.
And I just see a whole bunch of issues coming out of it because people are awful.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. You talk about that sustained interaction too, because listen, not that we would ever want to speak ill of any of our fans, but over 10 years of podcasting, we've maybe had one or two who, if I had to interact with on a daily basis for a long period of time, I'm not sure I would
be fans of them.
I'm not sure I could maintain my composure.
Your friendly facade.
Yeah, exactly. For a long-term thing. You know, there are just some people in this world that you want your interactions to be limited and every now and then.
That's why I only hang out with Joe once a week.
Yeah, that's why.
No, but I do think that you bring a good point up, and what you're talking about is the parasocial relationship.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this is something as a broadcaster that I had to become very intimately acquainted with and spent weeks studying, is that when people hear you and hear your personality and hear your voice over a podcast or a radio show. It has a way of making them feel like you're their friend without knowing, without the person on the other end of that knowing that you really exist. It happens to radio people all the time where, you know, there's someone who gets, you know, not, I don't, obsessed is maybe the wrong word, but they think that
connected, deeply connected.
They think that they're making a much larger impact in this person's life than maybe they really are. And then when the reality is brought to them, it's something that they can't really handle.
But amplify that by continual, you know, contact with certain people. Amplify that by Twitch donations. Amplify that by, you know, everything that already goes into this whole esports / Twitch casters culture. And you'll have people who feel like, no, motherfucker, I know you. Like, we're
paid for their besties.
Cool.
Exactly. See, and now this kind of peels back the conversation on the expectation that people are put under after they become some kind of public figure, whether it's a popular streamer, whether it's a radio show or a podcast. People have expectations for not just your conduct, but for the way that, you know, you
for who you are.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I just don't want it to become like, you know, like Doki Doki Discord chat. Like, I don't want that. I don't want a situation where you're gonna have people who have so much access and they're so into this Discord chat this thing,
for example,
that it becomes dangerous.
What's like a Dr. Disrespect Discord channel look like? You know what I mean? Like,
Fucking mess.
You know what I mean?
That's what it would look like.
But I mean, I think that's a fairly valid question when it comes to stuff like this, because, you know, that's one person. That's one person that ostensibly thousands of people are there to try to talk to and get their attention, right? Like,
you think
when one of these esports dudes sits down and says something, that it's going to go ignored? It's not our Discord channel, for crying out loud. I can say something and no one will respond to it for 45 minutes to 4 hours, right? in a Discord channel like this, you know, XQC comes in and says one thing. You think that people are going to shut up and not respond to that? Come on.
No, respond immediately.
It's going to get ridiculous, and I don't think that it's sustainable.
I don't even know that I don't think it's sustainable. I think it is something that you're going to have to take a measured approach with, and something you're going to have to be kind of smart about. I think overall, it's not a terrible idea, and it really does speak to what makes esports great.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There is so many ways for it to go wrong that you just need to be cognizant of that.
Absolutely, 110%. We also talk about the latest in gaming news, as well as loot boxes finally having some action from the ESRB on this issue. And, you know, maybe it's not enough, but it's at least a start.
This is going to be a really fun conversation.
Yeah, and here's the thing is that, you know, normally we do give additional conversation to some of the points that we bring up on the show here on the podcast. We're kind of going to fast forward through this particular conversation because we're holding off a lot of our comments until next week when we can devote. Dive. Yeah, we're going to devote, I think, at least 12 minutes to this.
Yeah, it'll probably be our opener.
Yeah. So check back next week for the radio show if you're interested to hear our thoughts about the ESRB getting involved loot boxes. Sale. Yes, that's right. That's a front sell right there. We also talk this week about Black Panther. Marvel's latest addition to the cinematic universe has been setting box offices on fire. It is the third most popular Marvel cinematic movie, the fifth most popular comic book superhero movie ever made. That has to say something right there.
Yeah, and it still hasn't like released in like China, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it hasn't come out in China yet. I think they said it'll be at $1 billion before the end of the weekend.
Disney is going to check yet another movie into the billions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is that so many critics, and I mean so many, had dismissed this movie as going to be enveloped by the Infinity War hype. And it is the complete opposite, where it is driving interest in Infinity War to levels that I haven't seen previous in the MCU.
There are people who I know have no clue of what's going on in Marvel Cinematic Universe, watched Black Panther and was like, yo, when's the next movie he's going to be in? Oh, yeah, in May. Fuck, shit, what?
Did it get anyone you know to go back and reinvest themselves in the movies that came before it?
Yes.
That's what I
saw. Really?
Because I saw people.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I had friends coming out of Black Panther and go like, wait a minute, this story began in Age of Ultron? Like, yeah, Age of Ultron and Civil War were the lead into this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, I'm going to go watch those. Like,
yeah.
All right, great.
I think for me, personally, I think one of the marks of greatness is if a movie can go back and make you reinvest in a huge dose of canon that came before it. And I mean, that's pretty much as big of a dose of canon as you can
get,
the MCU. But the other thing that I really like about that is the fact that it did it to me as well. Like, I had checked out of Phase 3. I checked out at Civil War, and my coworkers invited me to see Black Panther, and I said, okay, sure, because I had nothing else I was doing. And it made me go, okay, I got to see the rest of Phase 3 now. And I left the theater, came home, and I watched Civil War. And I have to notice that amount of enthusiasm in myself when it happens, and I got to say, man, that's got to happen in other people too.
Did Civil War then make you watch Spider-Man Homecoming?
Oh, I went in chronological
order. Everything.
I watched everything in order after I saw Black Panther.
Oh,
so I saw
that
Black Panther,
missed.
I went back to Civil War, and then went through all of the movies in order from there.
Sweet.
Oh my! Spider-Man was so good.
Do you think that going forward now you're gonna like stick to watching them, or you think you're going to like fall behind again?
I mean, I said that the last time
you
too.
You did.
And I think part of the problem was that, you know, for Civil War, I think I wanted to go with a big group of people,
mm-hmm.
and that opportunity never presented itself. So I kind of put it on the back burner. So I don't want to, you know, like, I don't want to promise anything.
Right.
That,
but yeah, your intention.
But I mean, like, definitely that movie got me reinvested. And, you know, I think that speaks to not just, you know, the strength of the character, but the quality of the film as
itself.
A film.
Yeah.
As a film.
100%.
Yeah.
And it does speak to, like we said on the show, a good movie can really like change things. Like Black Panther for me would have been kind of in the same place that Guardians of the Galaxy was, when I had to be dragged to see Guardians of the Galaxy because I did not know who they were. I did not care. And I walked out of there, and it was one of my favorite Marvel MCU movies. And so, but because that was so good, I will give anyone a chance in the MCU now. Like, I saw Black Panther after that, and thought, sure, I don't know much about Black Panther, but I'm in.
110% the same way with Doctor Strange. I actively did not like the Doctor Strange character in the comic books when I read them growing up, and I said, this is the one movie where I'm just not interested. And I think the fact that that came out directly on the heels of Civil War made my complacency even worse, and it decreased my motivation. But after I saw it, that's my favorite movie. Like, that's my that's my favorite movie in the MCU, and maybe one of my favorite movies, period.
Really?
See, and that was the thing, because again,
and I'm a movie dork, man. I'm a huge movie buff.
Doctor Strange was the first movie where in the trailers I was going, you know what? I don't know. This makes me think of a DC Marvel or a DC superhero movie.
I could see
when
that.
I see the trailers. But again, because Guardians of the Galaxy was so good, I made the promise, like, I'll give them all at least a chance until they disappoint me. Well, Doctor Strange certainly did not disappoint. It was great.
No, it was great. And I think part of what is interesting about this whole thing is that, and you kind of took the words right out of my mouth, Joe, is the fact that at this point, there's really no Marvel movie where I'm going, because I was getting fatigued, because I was a person that was like, you know, first day Marvel movie, I'm there. It's going to be good. At the very least, I will be entertained.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And it was something about like Ant-Man where I just sat back and I was like,
Ant-Man was super safe, I felt.
Yeah. And it was not just that it was super safe. It was just like, it's what ramifications will
it was
Ant-Man
hard. Where was, how is this going to play?
It was hard to see.
Yeah. But after, you know, going back and I kind of did the same thing for some of the smaller ones. I went back and watched everything. And then what I did was went back and watched, you know, Batman versus Superman. And I was just like,
oh,
the difference in quality.
No, oh my God.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine, Virtus, at work. And I had told him that by the end of Thor Ragnarok, I was so tired of shtick. I was so tired of you know, like these jokes and one-liners being thrown out. And he brought up a really good point. And he goes, well, you've been seeing all of the superhero movies. And I was like, nah, I just kind of caught up and you know, did a super binge of Marvel movies. And he goes, oh, well, you don't know the monotony of the DC films then.
Yep.
And I was like, you know what? I don't. And he's like, you know, I think that they did that to purposefully contrast how serious and dour and boring DC's attempts have been.
Partially. That's but the other half of it is that Marvel also walks the line. They do.
Marvel does a better job at comedy than most comedies.
Right. Well, but I mean, they have, like, you know, Thor Ragnarok, obviously very shticky. It was. And I liked it, but because
I am in a cage. I bet you're wondering how I got here.
Yeah, exactly.
From the opening line, I'm just like, ugh.
It's so cheesy. But at the same time, when they do more serious ones than, like, Doctor Strange or Black Panther,
they nail it.
But the things like Thor Ragnarok provide the contrast for those films.
That's fair.
And allow those to get more room.
Black Panther shines more because of the stickiness of a movie like Thor Ragnarok.
I agree. That I will agree on. It's just, it felt tonally weird up against the other Thor movies.
But it also makes a character like Shuri awesome.
Yes.
Who's she's kind of sticky, but she's sticky in a way that
she's quippy, not
she's
sticky.
Quippy. Yeah, she's not quippy.
It's not quite sticky. See, yeah. like I don't think that Spider-Man is sticky. He's quippy.
No, he's mm-hmm. quippy, but that's part of his character. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, Michael Keaton, thank you for the performance in Spider-Man.
And seriously, Michael Keaton in Spider-Man was one of the best things I've ever seen in any movie so ever. Good. It was so good. It was so fucking good. But I do think that Shuri's quippiness sets her up for something much larger down the line in MCU.
Dude, Joe's theory of where her
arc is,
dude, she ends up being Ironheart.
Yes,
oh please,
that would
if
be
any
so
justice
awesome.
In the universe.
That would be like, because I didn't. I had a I don't know, Norris. I don't know if it was you or if it's my coworker at work who was like she should have become Black Panther when he lost the power. Like, she should have gone and, like, put on the mantle.
Well, yeah, because in the book she did.
Right. And he's like, how did they avoid doing that? I'm like, because she's going to be Ironheart.
Yep.
That's why.
That actually makes
it.
That makes a shitload of sense.
Yeah.
Makes a shitload of sense.
Oh, please let that happen.
Do you think Tony Stark has to die or retire?
Without a doubt.
I think he dies.
He's got to die.
He dies in Infinity War.
You think?
Yeah. I don't know. See, I thought
Is that why we don't see any Iron Man in the Wakanda scenes?
Originally, I thought it'd be Captain America who's going to die in Infinity War. Now, I'm definitely leading that it's going to be Tony Stark.
You think?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be heartbroken because, like, I think that's such a... Because, like, they've talked about how Phase 4...
Because his contract's up, yeah.
No, well, and there's the thing. They talk about how Phase 4 is supposed to be, like, there's before Infinity War, and there's after Infinity War. This... I mean, Iron Man is what started all of this.
It's fitting for him to die to end it. He's kind of the glue. Him and Cap are like the glue that brings everything together.
You know, the last time we said that about somebody, he got stabbed in the chest.
Yeah,
that's true.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to the way that the MCU continues. I have a little bit of a pet theory that many of the heroes that we know are going to get wiped out, more than a few of them. I think that Cap is a definite question mark. I think Iron Man is a pretty strong contender for going, but Chris Evans' contract is also pretty close to being
and
up too.
And that's the thing, because they have a ready-made replacement for Iron Man now with Shuri.
Right.
She could well be that. You could argue that Bucky would be a replacement for Cap.
Exactly.
Or
yes.
Falcon.
Yes.
Yeah.
He could be that too.
I'm leaning more towards Cap because we've seen him with the shield.
Yeah.
I think that's what the Winter Soldier with the shield scene is supposed to do.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And I think...
Because he does take it up, doesn't he? Am I crazy about that? Like,
at some point he did. Yeah. But I also think... And this would be so heartbreaking and amazing. I also think, though, that they kill off Spider-Man.
I'm with you there.
I think they kill off Tom Holland.
I think they kill off Tom Holland to motivate... To motivate Tony Stark, right? Because Tony Stark has got to be motivated to action by something, and he brought Spider-Man in.
Yeah.
So I think if you kill off Spider-Man, that motivates Tony Stark. Tony Stark isn't acting rationally. He's acting emotionally. He gets struck down.
Yep.
Oh, my heart.
And
if they kill Tom Holland, my heart.
But that opens
the Miles
door
Morales.
For Miles Morales.
Yeah, it does.
Who we know is in universe.
We've seen him,
Was that confirmed? Was that Childish Game Gambino's character was Miles Morales?
No,
he's somebody else.
Oh, he's somebody else.
Yeah.
I thought that somebody got named as Miles Morales in the credits.
He was named, and I think it was like a cameo, because it was a kid, and somebody goes, "Hey, Miles."
Oh! Yeah.
That scene happens in Spider-Man.
I think that Danny Glover's character,
Donald
Glover's character is Miles Morales' uncle, who is in the Ultimate Timeline. He breaks into Oscorp or whatever it is, and a spider gets into the bag, takes him home. Miles visits his uncle, and that's how he gets bit.
Okay. Interesting.
Oh, very
interesting.
Cool.
Okay. I literally just thought about Danny Glover in a Spider-Man suit. And that was hilarious.
Too old for this shit. We also talk about OWL Stage 2 and the meta shifts that come along with that, as well as the announcement of the brand new Overwatch hero number 27.
Brigitte.
Yes, that's right. A hybrid tank healer class, and looks like it's going to be shaking up a lot of the meta and maybe a lot of the comps moving forward.
Yeah, and on top of that, this is what I'll say. If you want to hear us talk more about Brigitte and talk more about the meta changes, you can check me and Robbie out on Low Team Damage. That'll be coming up Tuesday, every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
And we wrap up as we normally do with our social media question, asking what your favorite piece of DLC is. Now, we got to get into this list. Robbie, you have brought us a list.
Yeah. Now, when I had teased this on the show, you thought I was being a little aggressive, but this list is actually called the 15 worst gaming franchises that are so terrible, you are a moron if you keep buying into them.
All right, now, you named me.
I did.
You named me. So, clearly, here's the you got to drop. You got to drop some moment.
One of your games is near the top of the list. So I'm not going to get there right yet.
I'm almost 100% sure I know what it is.
We're at number 14.
And 14.
This is the one.
This is top 15 or top 14?
Top 14.
Top 14.
This is the one I have a problem with. Fallout.
Why? What's wrong with Fallout?
That's a weird
According
inclusion.
To them, it's the same game every time, with dull, drab blues and manure brown colors, and it's all procedurally generated crap that's all just the same, filled
the
with
bugs. The game's 80 square miles by 80 square miles. What are you talking about?
This list, by the way, comes courtesy of Ranker. Just going to throw that out there.
Like R-A-N-K-E-R, Ranker?
That's right. Okay. Yep.
That's
yep.
Right.
Yep.
Not
yeah.
R-A-N-C-O-R, like, you know.
Like the Rancor?
Yeah,
that'd
no.
be sweet.
No. Yeah, so that was the first one that I disagreed with. Yeah.
Wait, Fallout, like,
the Fallout franchise, if you buy it, you're a moron.
But that's stupid, because it's only been the same for 3, New Vegas, and 4.
That's true. Because the
Fallout
first
1 and 2 are nothing like the other 3 games.
Yeah.
There's a lot on this list you guys probably aren't going to agree with.
Oh, so that's a person that already we're starting the list off with somebody that doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Number 13, I think I agree with, because I burnt out on it pretty quick. God of War.
Yeah.
I mean, the new trailer that we saw for E3 last year was the first time in a long time where we were like,
oh,
all right.
Anything has changed with God of War. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, my friend Jello would probably get very upset at me if he heard me say this, but I have never really been that into God of War. I played the PSP game and thought it was all right, but never really saw a reason to bite the bullet and go to the full console route. So yeah, I'm actually gonna kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I'll let that one slide.
That's cool.
That's fine.
Number 12, Uncharted.
Totally agree, 100%. I'm done with Uncharted.
Wait, but isn't Uncharted done?
I mean, it is now. Yeah, and basically they're what they're saying here is that it's kind of just the same game every time, updated graphics, and really just
but not
following
just that,
in the shadow of Indiana Jones.
But not just that. After 2, and then Tomb Raider re-released, and then you basically realize that Tomb Raider was a better game than Uncharted was. There was no reason to buy Uncharted.
The nail was
anymore.
In the coffin as soon as Tomb Raider like figured
rebooted
it out
how
and
she did.
Got it right. Mm-hmm. And that's another like
you think that's why they wrapped up the series.
Part of it, and I
like, part
they,
of it, yeah.
They were like, the game that we ripped off and replaced a woman with a man in is Come doing back. It better again, so we should probably just shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be part of it. The other part of it is I feel like, you know, Nathan, they wanted to end his story. And then people got mad, so they just kept extending his story out longer and longer and
but
longer.
It's like, how many games do I need to hear Nolan North do the same 10 lines in over and over again?
Yeah, that. No, I'm totally.
And bless him, he's an awesome voice actor, but still.
So fair enough. Two out of three on this list
so far, halfway decent.
All right. 11, Far Cry.
Nah.
Yeah, no. You're an idiot if you keep going.
Nah, Far Cry's lit.
Primal
was pretty bad.
No. Up until I get my hands on the new one that's coming out, you're not going to change my mind on.
That's the thing. Primal looked terrible. Everything that I saw about it, I did not want to play that.
Far Cry 5 looks lit.
I picked up 3, and I played it for maybe 2 days and fell off of it. But 5 I'm really excited for. So
the 4, where you're playing the bunch of kids who are on the island with terrorists, and it was just...
That was 3.
Was that 3?
That was 3.
Oh, the guy with the mohawk?
Yeah, that's 3.
That's okay, 3?
Four was the one that I got.
4 is when you're in, like, Nepal, basically. Yep.
Oh, that's the one with the animals.
Yeah. No, that's Primal.
That's Primal?
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, there's animals you kill to, like, to upgrade stuff. You get, like, their pelts and stuff in 4. Yeah.
I think I tapped out at 3, then.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, maybe...
4 was good, but if you skipped 4 in Primal, I'm not mad. So, I'll let that one go.
Yeah, I'm going to let the jury's out until
jury's
5.
Out. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Fair enough.
Number 10, Dishonored.
No, wait.
What? There's only been two of them.
Yeah.
There has definitely only been 2. Here's the thing. I did really like the first Dishonored. Didn't go back and play it any more than I did the first time. I got the second one, and I kind of got bored and fell off.
I hear the DLC was pretty good.
I have been hearing good things about the DLC, though. But like you said, there is technically only 2. I don't know that
you can't be burnt out at 2 games.
Well, they're not necessarily saying burnt out. They're just saying terrible franchises. I don't know. At what point do you start qualifying something as a franchise? Does 2 count?
3 games.
Three games. Yeah. That's
I think 3 games is where you count. And by the way,
I'd say 4, because at 3 you're at a trilogy.
You call it a trilogy before you call it a franchise.
Become a saga,
at
you're
4 you're starting to become a franchise.
All right, fine. That's fair. That's fair.
It wasn't the Mass Effect franchise until Andromeda.
Yeah,
that's right. It was a Mass Effect trilogy, self-contained.
That's fair.
Because as a matter of fact, based off storytelling, you have a.
Yeah. I like that trilogy.
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Number 9, Civilization.
No.
Hey, wait a minute.
Awesome.
Civilization is good. 1, 2, 3, 4 are outstanding. 5 was.
Six is great.
No, like. Franchises that are bad and you're a moron if you keep buying them, it's an RTS game.
Right.
Or a turn-based strategy game.
I've never bought one.
I got 6 right now. As a matter of fact, I played it a couple days ago. It's awesome. I love playing Civ.
It seems like the author of this article definitely feels burnt by Civ 5 because the whole thing is them basically calling it highway
robbery. Totally fair.
No. Civ 5 and that's fair,
sucks.
But that's the bullshit that I'm talking about when it comes to these lists in this games, you know, ranking thing. When it's like, dude, you have a game has 6 or 7 or 10 games.
Right.
You're gonna have some stinkers in there.
One bad entry means the franchise sucks and we shouldn't support it anymore. No.
Morons.
When you do a bunch of good games, you get a little leeway.
Right.
Everyone screws up.
Everybody had a Halo Reach.
Right. And Civ 5 was butt. Yeah. Liquid butt.
morons, all of you.
It was butt.
Butt. Liquid butt. Butt in liquid form.
That's right. But, I mean...
Condensed butt.
They clearly knew what was wrong, because they fixed it with 6.
What was the name of that drink from Tropic Thunder? Booty sweat. That's what he said.
All right. Number 8... Assassin's Creed.
Totally deserves it.
100%.
And Robbie, I know you've been saying great things about Origins.
They're the kings of the shit.
Here's the thing. I 100% agree with this, too. Origins turned it around, but this guy refuses to even play it. He says the trend seems to continue with Origins, and I disagree with that.
Well, here's the thing, though. This is literally the opposite of the last thing, just because the most recent game is decent does not always forgive the past sins of the series.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Number 7, every single series by Telltale Games.
Kill yourself.
Because, and they say that despite the illusion of choice, there is no choice. They really all end the same.
That's every video game ever made. Unless you're near Automata and you have 48 different endings. Yeah,
except for games with multiple endings.
Yeah. There have been 40 plus episodes across all Telltale's various series, and the reality is that every single one runs in the same old, ugly engine and features the same tired, meaningless choices. The entire company is stale.
Yeah, wow. See, I would feel really I would probably agree with him if every Telltale game was, you know, $60, but they're not. So.
That's probably fair.
I dropped, I think, $29 for the collector's edition of their Back to the Future game, and that game was great.
They have a Back to the Future one?
They have a Back to the Future one, and it's super good. And yes,
I'm
they
going
got
through
Michael
Batman
Bay Fox.
Right now. It's awesome.
I don't know. I watched one of my ex-girlfriends play through the Walking Dead game.
Walking Dead game was really good.
And it was good. I mean, I liked the narrative. I just, the gameplay style was not up my alley.
And that's really all they're supposed to be is stories, really.
Yeah.
Number six, Gears of War.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
I never liked that series.
I actually
liked
Gears of War, but I'm going to agree. It's pretty tired out at
this
point.
The difference between Gears of War 1 and Gears of War 3.
You can't.
Mm-mm.
You can't. Not even from a gameplay perspective.
Number 5, Destiny.
Yeah.
Isn't there only two?
There's only two. I don't know. But it's also
an MMO, so it's...
Yeah.
It's not quite
the same thing.
They have expansion, so...
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah,
but
at
the same time, like, I get why he put it on the list. Both those games started to a big hype and then kind of fell over.
Mm-hmm.
I get why, like, guys, don't get suckered in again.
Yeah,
I think I can
probably agree with that.
At the end of the day, yeah, I'll give him Destiny. Yeah.
Number 4. Halo.
Yeah. But the jury, the market already spoke on Halo, so what are we talking about here, dude?
So
when was the last good Halo?
I never liked them, but I'm gonna probably agree with 3 too. I feel like that's the last time that
which one was the one with the Arbiter? That's Halo 2, right?
2 was the one with the Arbiter. The Arbiter's in 3, but he was introduced in 2, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was so fucking good.
Oh, the entirety of 2, yeah. Interesting. Halo the Arbiter, 2's. You have the temporary invisibility, and he plays completely different than Master Chief does. The two stories eventually intersect at the end.
Awesome.
Like, yeah, no, Halo 2 was a classic. Halo 1, I mean, Halo 1 is clunky and does not hold up well.
But it is
one of those times. It transformed video games in so many ways.
Yeah.
So I totally get where this comes from. But yeah, after 3, like 3 was where everyone kind of went, this is still fun. Yay. And then when 4 came around, most people were like, oh no.
Number 3 is going to fall into the same sort of problem that we did with Dishonored, Watch Dogs.
No, I actually think that this is fair because both of those games have been total and complete non-starters.
Yeah.
Neither of them.
Watch Dogs. What is Watch Dogs?
Watch Dogs is a hacker. Assassin's Creed with a cell phone.
Or GTA. GTA, except you can't do as much cool shit.
Yeah. I had it confused in my head with Infamous.
That's fair.
Infamous is also a series that was a non-starter.
Yeah.
I got a friend of mine who's really like, oh man, Infamous is lit. I had so much fun.
Wait a minute. Is that... No, I also have both of those games confused with Saints Row in my head. That one was actually decent, wow. Right?
No, Saints Row was funny because it was a parody.
Yeah. No, but I mean,
man, all those games were the same for a period of 5 years.
No. Infamous, Prototype.
And
Watch Dogs.
Were all the same game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
right. Very, very similar. And here's the thing about Watch Dogs that makes me go, yeah, it's worthy of inclusion, is because the second game, literally every character in that, every protagonist in that, is someone that I want to bully in high school. That I want to, I just want to give them swirlies and pants them and dump their books all fucking day because they suck. They're terrible. Like, there's one dude who looks like a punk rock dude, but then they gave him this like LED face mask that's like on a paintball mask. It's dumb. It is so cringeworthy and dumb. Stop it.
All right, here's for me the moment of truth. This is bigger than number 1 in my eyes. Number 2, Norris, did you want to take a stab at it?
Number 2?
Yeah.
Dynasty Warriors?
No.
It's got to be Street Fighter.
Street Fighter.
Okay, there we go.
All
of the dicks. Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, let me put one of the most important franchises on the face of the earth on his list.
Street Fighter 4 got four different editions over the course of its lifespan. That means Capcom sold you the same game with a few new fighters four separate times.
It's because
times.
We didn't have DLC, you clown. Of course, if we wanted to rebalance the game, we had to put out a new version.
I was like, how many versions of Street Fighter 2 sold?
Wait,
that's what you
had
to do.
At four? At four?
At four?
At four? Like, at Street Fighter 4,
yeah,
there was
but
no DLC.
But none of those were full price. None of those were full game price. Not one.
But are you saying there was no DLC in Street Fighter 4?
No, there was. There was plenty. I was talking about
in
back
the
then.
The era of Street Fighter 4, I was going to say.
The Street Fighter 4 cycle is when DLC was popping off. You didn't have it before then.
But that's the point, though. Couldn't they have done all of that shit as DLC?
They did do it all as DLC. When Street Fighter 4 came out, you had Super, you had Ultra. Both of those came out as DLC. Both of them.
But you could probably also buy them just as a new game if you wanted to.
Yeah. So if you wanted, and neither one were full price.
Okay.
All right, and then number one.
So shut up.
I'm just the messenger, man. Who wants to take a crack at number one?
Final Fantasy.
Please be Final Fantasy.
No.
That means Final Fantasy did not make the list.
No, Square Enix made the list. Number one, Call of Duty.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Well, it's totally fair. That's a softball ending.
It scans, but at the same time, it is obvious. Yeah.
That is so anticlimactic.
It really was. Like, you're like, of course.
Street Fighter was number fucking two.
I do think that Final Fantasy probably should have been in place of Street Fighter.
This is somebody, I'll agree with that. You know what this is? This is somebody who was born in like 2003 who decided, oh, I know how to write a little bit. Let me actually make a list of a bunch of games I heard people talking about for most of the time.
This guy's butt hurt because because Civ 5 sucks, so clearly Civilization he's in. What about fucking 10-2, 12, 13, and 15 for Final Fantasy?
You might as well have called this list the last game from the series I bought sucked, so I'm not buying the new one.
Yeah, basically. Basically,
well, yes.
Guys, Resident
he
Evil
says,
not in there.
That's not to say these franchises
fucking
aren't
Resident,
without merit.
No. Resident Evil deserves to be in there for five and six.
For the same reason that Assassin's Creed is on there.
Yep.
The most recent one does, while it is, if you're going to, like, we get it, you're going to keep going with the series, and you've done a great job of resetting it to do that, it doesn't make up for the past sins of 5 and 6.
100%.
Oh, my 100%. God. That list sucked, Robbie.
This is probably my favorite list.
I'll say this. To be fair, there's never been a list we've liked.
And you guys also agreed with actually a few of them, too.
A handful of them.
How the fuck is Dynasty Warriors not on there?
I wouldn't necessarily call that a measure of success. What I would call it is I am glad that we did this as a podcast and not on the air.
Oh, because there was much swearing.
That's right.
That needed to be had based off that list.
No Dragon Warrior.
Did you ever in a million years think that it was Street Fighter? No Sonic the Hedgehog.
No Sonic the Hedgehog on that list.
That is a problem. No Kingdom Hearts.
But that's because they're not gonna, I forgot about all the mobile games, the PSP games.
Yep, see, you're a fucking moron if you bought all of that shit. If you bought 1 and 2, I get it, I'm buying this
because when they release 3, this is gonna be vital to the story.
No, it won't. It's gonna get the events of that game are gonna get summarized in a sentence, and then that's it.
Hey, did that list come out before Bubsy 4 released?
What is this face?
That means after. It came out after Bubsy 4, and he didn't put Bubsy on that fucking list.
Look, Bubsy does some stuff right and well. Okay?
Like what?
You said yourself it was the best one yet.
Sure.
Fair enough.
That's a thing you said.
But I mean,
And then I gave it a 2 out of 10.
In a long line of dumps, this dump was less dumpy than the rest of the
dumps. This one was at least an easy wipe when I was finished. That's what Bubsy 4 was, an easy wipe.
Why are you always bringing it back to Bubsy?
Yeah, we didn't bring up Bubsy.
You did it.
I'm not on the air. I can.
You are on the air.
Nah, the podcast doesn't count.
Okay.
Well, you gave up on that one pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm tired.
If the FCC can't find me over it, it doesn't count.
All right, guys, that's going to be it for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Check out checkpointradio.com, where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand, posted every Tuesday, interviews from past episodes, and much, much more. That's all over at checkpointradio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Come on, get us to 60. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers, Rick Scott, Kevin Graham, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to checkpointradio.com.